a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Janovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
I am watching the ocean. I mean, it looks like it's just crashing into that bridge in Tampa, in the Tampa Bay area, Dave. Do you see that up there on CNN? I'm worried that that bridge could wash out. We're looking at some crazy, wild video that's being piped into studio right now.
Yeah. Deb, there's a scale about wind damage. It's called the Beaufort scale, and it says that your shingles are going to start getting ripped off at about 50 miles an hour. The wind speed right now, sustained wind speed, in the worst parts, 155 miles an hour. How about this? The wind gusts, 190 miles an hour. Just absolute preparing for utter destruction in the Tampa Bay area. It's 9:08. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
And here are three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
A significant amount of time in the next 3 hours spent covering Hurricane Ian as it bears down on Florida. And Dave also saw some just heartbreaking video out of Russia that, Dave, I thought you were going to pass out when you were watching this video. It seemed like it really shook you. So we're going to talk about that as well in our 11 o'clock hour. We're going to talk about what men are doing to their bodies to avoid being mobilized to fight in Ukraine.
Debbie, it was one of the most disturbing videos I've ever seen. I mean,
I thought you were going to pass out.
I thought I was going to pass out. And I've got a strong stomach. And you can just see the desperation. And quite frankly, it's people breaking bones on purpose.
Ugh.
To get out of serving without getting called up. It is just absolute desperation in Russia.
Countdown to.
In our 10 o'clock hour, we've got a political controversy brewing in Salt Lake County as the Democratic Party is calling on longtime state Senator Gene Davis to resign his position. Publicly accused of sexually harassing an intern. Davis refusing to step down. Now his attorney speaking out to defend the embattled senator. Dave, his attorney's calling the show at 10:05.
Yeah, again, very, very serious allegations. I'm interested in what the due process is. How do they investigate this? Have they really given a concerted effort to learn from both sides of the story? Because when there are serious allegations like this, you have to take them seriously. But at the same time, you can't convict somebody immediately just off accusations.
Launch countdown one.
Full and in-depth coverage all morning long of Hurricane Ian. Floridians fleeing, officials prepping for what could be the worst hurricane in U.S. history. According to the latest, Dave, the eyewall is about 25 miles, probably even closer now, outside of Cape Coral, which is on the southern tip of Florida. In Tampa, you and I both saw a video of the bay being sucked out into the ocean. It's just gone. It scares me because you got 155-mile-an-hour winds sucking up the water.
I don't use the word monster often. It's a monster. When you get this type of storm approaching such a populated area in southwest Florida, this is going to be an issue.
I knew in a tsunami that the ocean would start to recede. That was one of the telltale signs. I had no idea that this could happen with a hurricane where the water starts being sucked away from the shores, and then that is used by the storm to build up intensity. If you've been injured in an accident, the launch is brought to you by the Good Guys. The Good Guys, you can check them out online at goodguyslegal.com.
Dave and Genovic.
The launch.
Commence.
KSL's top national story. Special coverage with Dave and Genovic.
Dave, our producer, just got in my ear and told me that is the Sunset Sky Bridge that looks like it could be swallowed up by the ocean at any time. We have got our eye on Tampa Bay and other parts of Florida as Hurricane Ian bears down. Get out. That is the warning. Certainly, Ian is just making its way towards Florida very quickly. We've got a live interview with KSL meteorologist Kevin Eubank in a moment. He is waiting on the line right now. But first, a warning from Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
People are taking a risk with their health, their safety, and their lives by being in the eye of that storm.
All morning long, I have been listening to coverage in Florida. I put together a little mix from WFLA in Florida.
Flooding is likely. We're not talking about surge flooding. We're talking about just it has been raining cats and dogs.
Scared a little bit, not too much.
This is just baked water, 90 degree water that will provide, unfortunately, some sort of jet fuel for this storm.
I mean, it's definitely the worst one that we've seen, but we knew that it was coming.
He said he expects historic flooding here.
We expect those 155 mile per hour winds possibly even to be strengthening.
The past few years, we haven't had anything, so we knew that something was going to happen.
Kevin Eubank, KSL meteorologist, joins us right now. Kevin, when do we expect to see this hit land?
So the rain bands, the severe storm, has already hit land, but the actual eye of this hurricane has the potential to reach the coast here in the next 3 to 5 hours. And so the video you're seeing out of Tampa Bay and all along the coast in Florida, I mean, these are crazy wind storms, or wind speeds, 155 miles an hour. That is the very top end of a Category 4, and the models were all holding to a Category 4 as it came on shore. That may hold true, but again, the latest National Hurricane airplane reconnaissance that went into this storm, penetrated that eye wall and got measurements, was like, this could easily tip up to a Category 5, which is at 157 miles an hour. So again, it doesn't matter at this point, a Category 4, Category 5, it is devastating. It is going to be just unbelievably epic for the folks in Florida. And let me paint a picture for you guys. We've heard about how big this storm is. And again, it's hard for us to understand how big it is geographically, but I'm going to give you some ideas. Las Vegas to Boise, that's how wide this storm is. Phoenix to Salt Lake, that's how big this storm is. So imagine a single storm coming to us and wreaking havoc in Phoenix and havoc in Salt Lake, and the bullseye hitting, you know, Moab and Arches. It's just, it's huge, that size of the storm. And when you start talking about the numbers of what kind of things we're expecting, we're talking 8 to 18 inches of rain to fall and a 12 to 18 foot storm surge, which is coming up on two stories. Take any single level house, totally underwater. Take a second story house and you're almost underwater. And that's all along the coast, all along the eastern border or the western border of Florida. And because the speed, the latest speed is moving, they think it's going to maintain hurricane strength all the way across Florida, which puts a hurricane over Orlando and then puts the hurricane over on the east coast of Florida where they have tropical warnings, but they don't have hurricane warnings. They're likely going to have to issue hurricane warnings there because this thing is just so big, so fast, so strong, and it's just going to be devastating. So the bridge you're watching and seeing if it's going to fall,
yeah,
that's one of many bridges that are going to have problems.
Yeah, that may become the first domino to fall, Kev. And I've also, last night, I looked into the weather in the Miami and the Tampa Bay area, and they were also under tornado watches and warnings as well because of this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, several tornadoes get spawned out of these hurricanes, and in fact, already a couple shots coming in out of local airports, airplanes completely flipped and flopped over on the runways, damage to buildings. So yeah, insult to injury is you got a whole bunch of tornadoes that are running around, and that is also part and parcel of what goes on in these kind of big hurricanes.
Could this be the worst hurricane in U.S. history, Kevin?
You know what? We say this every time.
Yeah.
When you start seeing a Category 4 or 5, it approaches a hugely populated area like Florida. Is the potential there? Sure. But I think what will serve us well in this, and again, this is a silver lining within a very dark cloud, is it's going to move fast. It's not going to be prolonged. It's not going to sit and churn. So because of the speed, it could limit, I guess, the catastrophic potential. But again, you're splitting hairs. It's a Category 4. It's going over a multi-million populated area in Florida, and it's going to get both sides of that coast with the infrastructure. It's the worst spot to hit Florida. Tampa Bay is a shallow bay. They're all there. And again, it's going to go south of Tampa Bay. But that area is all filled with inlets and waterways that take people's homes. And, you know, it's the worst place. It's just the worst place. It's not coming in on a beach in the sense of recreation. It's not coming in on an ocean wall like we see along the coast. These are inlets. This is the other side of Florida. And there's just a lot of people that live along there and a lot of infrastructure that makes it possible for people to live along there. And when you bring in a Category 4 or 5 storm over that, you're going to ruin infrastructure. And that's going to prevent people or limit the ability of people to get where they live, stay where they live, access where they live. And so I think the big total loss is likely going to come in infrastructure damage, in the sense of roads, bridges, and the ability to get where they need to get there. It's just, it's a big, big storm and a real serious deal.
Kevin Eubank, thank you for joining us, KSL meteorologist.
Thanks, Kev. Straight ahead, Dave, we're going to take our listeners to the heart of where hurricane territory is right now. We're going live to Florida in just a few minutes.
Dave and DeGeneres.
Continuing to track Hurricane Ian as it bears down on Florida. And there have only been three, and I say only, I mean three. That's a lot. A Category 5 hurricanes that have ever made landfall in the U.S. since 1924, Dave. Two of them have hit Florida. Governor DeSantis, officials there gearing up for a third one, possibly today, as Hurricane Ian gains strength.
The problem with this storm is that it's going to generate a massive amount of water and surge, and there's really no way that you can counteract that if you're someone on the barrier island, and even if you're in a nice sturdy home, you know, if you get 10 feet of storm surge, you know, that's going to potentially put your life in jeopardy.
It's hard to even comprehend, Debbie, because we've never experienced this. You've never been in a hurricane or anything or near it, have you?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, either have I. No. So you look at these videos, it is absolutely devastating already. Just with the rain, now when it hits, the surge happens, you will see just incredible devastation. Let's listen live to Naples FM Talk. That's in Marco Island, Florida. Let's go there live.
Western side of Lee County and Charlotte County and in DeSoto County and in southern Sarasota County and into our viewing area. That's going to be one of the most important pieces of information that you need to stay safe as the storm approaches and passes through southwest Florida as we go through the afternoon. Storm surge, as we just saw there on Fort Myers Beach, is already happening. And it's that push of the hurricane on top of the Gulf of Mexico creating this wave. And as Allison mentioned, it's gradual. This is a gradual process. We saw on camera here, I'll go back and show you again, we're already starting to see a little bit of this storm surge here at Fort Myers Beach. These waves are already crashing, and from time to time, we lose the internet signal of this camera, and it looks like that's exactly what's happening right now. But it goes in and out, as you would expect. It is really windy here at Fort Myers Beach. I'm going to hang on this for a moment, see if it comes back. It is frozen for the time being. But you can see even in that frozen picture how choppy that Gulf of Mexico is. That's those waves starting to build already, and this is going to get worse as the storm, even after the storm leaves and passes by, because we're going to have that push from the southwest just perfectly perpendicular just about to our beaches. And that's kind of like the worst case scenario for storm surge. A landfall just north of most of southwest Florida, and that water is crashing onshore from the southwest. This is a product that this company that we partner with, QRisk, they take that forecast.
You've
from
been
the
listening
National
to
Hurricane
live
Center.
Coverage. That is a radio station, WGUF in Naples, Marco Island, Florida. We're going to dip in and out of their coverage all morning long. I think they're staying with it around the clock. And it is what the hurricane eye of the hurricane starting to reach the eye wall of the hurricane starting to reach landfall as we speak. Kevin Eubank, KSL meteorologist, just on the line with us moments ago explaining how huge, Dave, this hurricane is.
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. As he described it, he said basically, if you were to put it on the West Coast, it would stretch from Phoenix to Salt Lake, that the eye would be somewhere in Moab. When we start hearing these descriptions, sometimes they use terminology we're unfamiliar with because we live in the middle of a desert. But when they're talking about the storm surge, it's one thing when you have this massive amounts of rain that is coming down. The storm surge is where the wind actually blows the ocean water and floods the coast with ocean water. So you're getting the double whammy of the ocean water that is flooding. You have the massive amounts of rain that is coming down that is flooding with fresh water as well. And you can just see how it just compounds into this destruction.
Governor DeSantis sending out numerous warnings to residents. You know, number of people have fled that area, yet probably a lot of people deciding to hunker down. Here's Governor Ron DeSantis talking about evacuations.
One thing, though, that we've been pointing out, Sean, when you're called to evacuate, it doesn't mean you need to leave the entire state. It doesn't mean you need to go hundreds of miles. In a situation like this, where we're concerned about the water, you know, anywhere that's higher ground in a sturdy structure, you know, you're going to be able to ride it out in that. Where we're concerned about is these low-lying areas, the places that are very prone to storm surge and to flooding.
Dave, let's dip back into coverage, live coverage of Naples FM Talk, WGUF, in Marco Island, Florida, and listen to what they're covering right now.
The coastal areas. And this is the reason why. It's because of the Comanche cutting across the county. And look at the storm surge potential here for this area near Bayshore. The inundation could be 12 to 15 feet, pushing all the way up towards Bayshore Road. And then we've got another little area here near the boathouse, if you know where that is, on State Road 31, right near the Lee Civic Center. The river there, that area could also see 12 to 15 feet of inundation because you're funneling that water and forcing it to go into a narrower area, and that forces that water level to be higher than it would a little bit downstream where the river is a little bit wider.
Debbie, a 12 to 15 foot surge, essentially a wave that is just going to flood this area. Like Kevin Eubanks said, that's halfway up your two story home. That your first story is already covered and flooded in water.
Getting word that the American Red Cross, some members from Utah, have deployed to Florida. They deployed yesterday. More than 500 Red Cross disaster relief workers, according to this news release, have moved into that area in order to help respond to the after effects, the aftermath of Hurricane Ian. Sustained winds right now, according to CNN, 155 miles an hour. Does that say wind gusts to 190 miles an hour, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely. The sustained winds are one thing, but when these wind gusts are just obliterating and uprooting trees as we watch.
Here's a taste of what we're going to be diving into straight ahead.
I'm on Pine Island right now, and you can see the southerly flow. Big time surge already happening between Sanibel Island and Pine Island here. This is Amanda.
Dave spent the morning sort of in Storm Central here at KSL News Radio, compiling videos from around the Twitter sphere, and he's going to take us in depth on what's going on in Florida, from what he's seen on Twitter, straight ahead.
Dave and Dejanovic, a new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM at 1160 AM.
Continuing to track Hurricane Ian, and Governor DeSantis has given evacuation orders to more than 2 million Floridians.
So people are taking a risk with their health, their safety, and their lives by being in the eye of that storm. Nevertheless, you do have search and rescue that are going to be poised to go to respond to people that are in difficult circumstances once the storm breaks through.
I was blown away, Debbie, when I heard Kevin Eubank describe the size of this storm. For example, if you were going to drive from one end of the storm to another, at 70 miles an hour, it would take you more than 10 hours to get through that storm.
It's huge.
It's Phoenix to Salt Lake.
Sustained winds, 155 miles an hour at last check. Has that gone up, Dave? No, 155 miles an hour still. 190 mile an hour wind gusts. And you took to Twitter all morning long. You kind of created your own storm central there in the audio booth. Tell us what you found.
Well, there's number one, everybody, every meteorologist is out in it. They are hanging from balconies as this thing is blowing through. Let me play a little bit from Pine Island. And this is an extreme weather meteorologist. Mm.
I'm on Pine Island right now, and you can see the southerly flow. Big-time surge already happening between Sanibel Island and Pine Island here. This is a mandatory evacuated area. Southerly winds right now just on the east side of strengthening Hurricane Ian. Hurricane Hunter aircraft have indicated that this is approaching Category 5 intensity. It underwent an eyewall replacement cycle yesterday and continues to intensify now. The eye is beginning to constrict with Hurricane Ian as it intensifies and as that pressure falls.
And I think a lot of people might be scratching their heads as you heard Ron DeSantis earlier talk about evacuations. He's asked more than 2 million Floridians to evacuate this area. But a lot of people, they just don't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several reasons for that.
Did you find out why?
Evacuation can be extremely expensive.
Okay. Yeah,
so your transportation, food, housing can be very expensive. If you are dealing with chronic illnesses, that's going to play into it. If you have a restrictive diet like diabetes, home oxygen tanks, dialysis machines, that's going to – mobility, even having a vehicle that you could load up and leave. This was one that really stood out to me, and I think specifically here in the Tampa area – Tampa hasn't seen a direct hit hurricane in 100 years. So I think a lot of people are just thinking, well, it always passes us by, but not this time.
Florida bearing down right now for what could become one of the most expensive and perhaps the worst hurricanes in U.S. history. Hurricane Ian, we just saw moments ago a lower crawl on CNN that said the eye wall of the hurricane is inching onshore now, winds 155 miles an hour, wind gusts 190 miles an hour. And then there was that video of Tampa Bay, Dave, that you saw, and wow, crazy.
This is the drainage that you can see here, literally getting sucked out into Charlotte Harbor. So you see the flow going out. That's going out to the Gulf.
So what is happening is all this ocean water that is on the shore is being sucked into the eye of the hurricane. And what that does is it basically stacks this water on top of the existing ocean as the hurricane is coming in, and it builds up this ginormous swell. A surge is what they call it. And then when it hits shore, you're bringing in a 10 to 15 foot wall of water that just comes in and will flood that area. Here's a weathercast in Tampa, Florida. I wanted to poll a little bit. As we heard from Kevin Eubank, I thought, well, what do the meteorologists sound like in Tampa?
There isn't anything that would keep it from strengthening a little bit. And there's certainly nothing to keep it, I mean, that would make it weaken. We really watch Max Defender Aiden just seeing this eye wall just concentric all the way around the center of circulation. And that just means that the storm is well formed. That's bad news because a well formed storm is a powerful storm. And then you have the rain bands, the inner rain bands that have stronger winds. And the farther you go out from the center of circulation, the weaker those rain band gets. But they're still whipping around a tropical system, sort of spinning into the center of circulation. So we've kind of already seen, as Jack was saying, off and on really heavy rain in Northport. Eventually, Northport's going to get closer to the eye of this storm, which is why the conditions are going to go downhill. I would hope that people are taking this all very, very seriously in that area.
Another common theme that I'm seeing all over the place on Twitter, every video I pull up, is really this focus on power outages.
Mm-hmm.
Another major concern, of course, are widespread power outages. The governor said 30,000 utility workers are on call, ready to assist with restoration efforts after the storm. And beyond Florida, Georgia has already declared a state of emergency, preparing for extreme weather as Ian heads north. But again, rain and wind picking up here, conditions only expected to get worse.
And Deb, this morning, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, has been very very clear with people to what to expect when it comes to power outages.
I saw on Twitter this morning, Dave, this power outage predictor map, and they said Fort Myers, which is in line to take a direct hit from Hurricane Ian, could be out of power for weeks.
You are starting to see power outages across the state, but you're going to see way, way more over the next 48 hours. I mean, you're going to have millions of people without power in this state within the next 48 hours, no question.
And getting the power back up is not going to be a quick fix.
There's a difference between simply having a down power line and repairing that, which you would do on normal types of storms, and then having major structural damage to the underlying electrical infrastructure. And when you have a Category 5 storm hitting, potentially, when you have massive storm surge, that is going to interrupt, most likely, a lot of the underlying infrastructure.
Amanda Dixon said her brother, I was talking to her about this this hurricane, said her brother used to live in Fort Myers or that area. And Dave, the concern, obviously, with any power outage that goes on for days, well, we can just imagine what the concerns there are. But demographically, the oldest population in the United States in that area. So now you start to paint a picture in your head of the catastrophic fallout that could happen to the folks who have stayed behind, if they have stayed behind in the Fort Myers area, who are in their 70s, their 80s, even older.
And hopefully, as Kevin Eubank was describing this, that it is moving quickly enough that it won't just sit on Fort Myers, that it won't sit in Tampa and just decimate this area. But there's no getting around this flooding. The flooding is going to be massive.
Straight ahead, Boyd Matheson stepping into studio to talk to us about how this is actually a potential for Governor Ron DeSantis to shine across the nation on how he handles not only the next couple of days, but the aftermath of Hurricane Ian. And as we head to break right now, we're going to dip back in live to radio station WGUF, which is right there as Hurricane Ian begins to hit Florida.
Floors high on that particular building. So the higher you are away from the ground, the faster the winds are going to move, of course. And it's very feasible when hurricanes make landfall that the category strength can actually go up a whole category when you go up like 30 floors. So even though here at the surface we're going to be experiencing category 4 force winds, in some of these high-rise condos that we have up and down our coast, the potential of category 5 force winds is a likelihood here given what we're seeing right now. And again, some of these other wind reports, if you can take that full screen so that it's easier to see at home. 81 miles per hour in Fort Myers at the Sanibel Harbor Yacht Club. A 68 mile per hour wind gust right now at Charlotte High School in Punta Gorda, and a 53 mile per hour wind gust here at Waterman Broadcasting. We're real close to where the Edison Mall is here in the city of Fort Myers. But look at the sustained winds right now. 55 miles an hour out of the east right now in Fort Myers. We've got a sustained south to southeast wind right now at 40 miles an hour in the city of Naples. So that's what the anemometers are saying. This is what the tower cameras are.
Dave and Dujanovic. Get a quick blast of news each morning.
From Ukraine to Utah County.
You'll hear it first.
And accurately.
On KSL.
Listen weekdays between 5 and 9 to Tim and Amanda.
Utah's morning companions for news. Dave and Dujanovic. Dave and Dujanovic.
Continuing to follow the developing story out of Florida, Hurricane Ian. We had Kevin Eubank, KSL meteorologist, paint us a picture not too long ago about how big Hurricane Ian is, Dave. And as he was painting us that picture, I thought, now here is a moment politically as well for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to shine.
Las Vegas to Boise, that's how wide this storm is. Phoenix to Salt Lake, that's how big this storm is. So imagine a single storm coming to us and wreaking havoc in Phoenix and havoc in Salt Lake, and the bullseye hitting, you know, Moab and Arches. It's just, it's huge, that size.
And there will absolutely be loss of life. This is just too big of a storm. It's going to be devastating. But there's a financial component to this as well, because the devastation, to put into perspective, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Maria, those were all over $100 billion worth of damage. And this is something that states have to absorb. I mean, they're going to be getting federal funds, of course, but trying to rebuild and having the manpower and the resources, it's just overwhelming.
Let's bring Boyd Matheson into the conversation. Boyd, in my view, so far so good for Governor Ron DeSantis. He was early in asking for help from the White House. He has called up the National Guard, 5,000 troops called up already. Fingers crossed that things, you know, continue to go this way for Governor DeSantis. I think this is either his moment to sink or swim in front of the nation as a potential presidential candidate.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting thing because the real key to Governor DeSantis doing well in the midst of this crisis is working with President Biden. And he's shown that he's willing to do that. Now, really interesting. Obviously, he has battled the Biden administration on a host of things. He has rejected federal funds on a number of things, saying, nope, too many strings attached. Nope, we're not interested. So the fact that he was able to check ego at the door, say what is best for the people of Florida, and go to President Biden and make the ask early, I think is significant.
You know, my view on all this is like, you know, you got people's lives at stake, you got their property at stake, and we don't have time for pettiness. We got to work together to make sure we're doing the best job for them. So my phone line is open, and we're happy. But we do appreciate the quick approval of the pre-landfall declaration.
Politically speaking, Boyd, how do politicians typically weather these storms?
This is pretty tricky. It's really tricky to navigate it all. I did think it was interesting that President Biden had reached out to several of the Democratic mayors in Florida. He didn't actually speak directly to Governor DeSantis until late last night on Tuesday. So that was kind of an interesting thing. We've seen this dance done well. You mentioned President Bush not so well in terms of interacting with governors and mayors from different parties. I actually think that the best example was actually President Barack Obama and Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey and Hurricane Sandy. And they not only pre-planned, they not only worked together on the front end, they developed this really interesting bond as they traveled the state together, as they went around. They were very gracious and understanding, and they did the right thing. They set the politics aside.
Setting politics aside, and I want to go back to what you just mentioned, which was Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, when the aftermath was horrific. And in fact, it basically cost the governor there an opportunity to run for re-election. And we know DeSantis is up for re-election in Florida as governor. And then there are these overtures that perhaps a run for the White House is in his future. But you also had fallout for President George Bush's approval rating after Hurricane Katrina just obliterated New Orleans. He went to New Orleans as FEMA boss Mike Brown had set foot in New Orleans and slapped him on the back, told him he was doing a heck of a job, remember?
There's going to be plenty of opportunities to help later on. But right now, the immediate concern is to save lives and get food and medicine to people so we can stabilize the situation. Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
Meanwhile, 1,500 people dead and dying as they're applauding, and then a million people displaced and confused over what the direction, the next step was for that city. And it just goes to show you that every step after the fact, the aftermath matters too.
Yeah, and that pre-preparation, I think, was important. I think with Katrina in particular, the pre-planning was not done, and that was where the real problem was.
And DeSantis has done that, it sounds like.
And so has the White House. So, again, I applause to both the governor and to the Biden administration. They pre-positioned a lot of FEMA workers, FEMA supplies, so they're ready to roll there. What gets done in advance of these storms is so important. And you also have to recognize, too, for both governors and for administrations, there are so many things that you just cannot plan for in this kind of storm in terms of where that's going to hit and who it's going to impact. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. But what gets done in advance is often the real tell in terms of how things will play out on the back end.
And part of what Governor DeSantis has done is he's left behind, I'm trying to remember exactly how he said it, essentially stay behind crews that stay behind, weather the storm, and then their job is to clear runways so that fixed aircraft can come in. part of that pre-planning that you were talking about, Boyd. There's a delicate balance, though, because as a leader, you want to keep morale up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't want to be tone deaf. So they're trying to thread this needle.
Yeah, and you don't want to get in the way. And you have to remember, when you have either a governor traveling or whether you have the – especially when you have the president of the United States traveling – that takes a lot of bodies, a lot of space, and a lot of resources. And if you're in the middle of a crisis, do you really want to worry about the motorcade coming down the street that's been washed out? And so it is that balance, to your point, Dave, that you have to know how much to lean in to be present without being in the way. That's a really delicate balance, both physically and your ego in politics.
Boyd Matheson, thank you. We'll talk to you a little later on in the show, but thanks for your insight.
At latest check, Hurricane Ian, 155-mile-an-hour winds, 190-mile-an-hour wind gusts. Dave, we were listening moments ago to the coverage out of WGUF, a radio station in the area, and you looked at me as we were heading to break and said, my goodness, the wind gusts have increased in just the time we've been on the air.
Yeah, they'd gone up. Again, the 155 miles an hour, that's like the eye of the storm. That is not what is in the coast right now. But in just the 20 or 30 minutes that we'd been on the air, it had increased 20 or 30 miles an hour on land. So they're up to about 55, 60 miles per hour sustained wind.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.